Hello and welcome to this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. And thanks to Recess Duty for bringing us in with our theme song. So let's jump in. This month, we're going to be having interviews with Nels Barnett of Cooper Landing Brewing Company and Darcy Kniefel, the beer ambassador from Midnight Sun Brewing in Anchorage. But first, let's talk beer news. Alaska Brewing Company's Heritage Coffee Brown Ale was awarded a gold medal at the Great American Beer Festival in Denver, Colorado. There were 89 entrants in the coffee beer category this year. Alaskan Brewing Plant Manager Curtis Holmes said, quote, "It's very exciting for us because it's a great example of two local businesses in Juneau coming together to make a beer that is now nationally recognized on the biggest stage of our industry. Great American Beer Festival has become so competitive that it feels like a great accomplishment to pull off a medal, let alone a gold. We are very humbled and honored to receive this award." Heritage Coffee Brown Ale is this year's fall seasonal beer for Alaskan Brewing, available through the rest of October in most areas where Alaskan is sold. Alaskan has also released its 2017 Smoked Porter, just weeks after the 2016 vintage received a gold award for strong smoked beer at the European Beer Star Awards. First brewed by Alaskan in 1988, Smoked Porter is a pioneer of the American smoked beer movement and has won more medals at the Great American Beer Festival than any other beer in history. Speaking of awards, this radio show, Drinking on the Last Frontier, received an honorable mention in the broadcast podcast category of the 2017 North American Guild of Beer Writers Awards. Winners were announced on Friday, October 6th at the Great American Beer Festival in Denver. Kenai River Brewing Company will be hosting a beer dinner in its tap room on Saturday, November 11th. Tickets cost $70, but the event was completely sold out in less than an hour. The brewery has also released this year's version of its Winter Warlock Old Ale. This beer is brewed each October and then cold conditioned for almost a year before being released on the 1st of October of the following year. The 2017 vintage is another excellent brew and fully lives up to the high standards set in prior years. The annual Beers by the Bay event will be held at the Sea Life Center in Seward on Saturday, November 4th. The event runs from 6:30 to 10 p.m. and tickets are $45, which includes 12 drink tickets and free samples of the appetizers and desserts being prepared by the regional chefs competing in the Chef Off. Proceeds for the event go to support the Alaska Sea Life Center. Midnight Sun Brewing has released its Wolf Pack Pilsner in 12-ounce cans. You can find them in 6 and 12 packs in various local liquor stores. Denali Brewing Company in Talkeetna has been involved in a couple of collaboration brews recently. In July, owner Sassen Mosassanen traveled to Beijing, China, to brew with Jingabring Brewing. Their effort was released this month. It's called Mead Me in the Middle Kingdom, a 9% braggot brewed with chased berry honey from a nature reserve in the hills west of Beijing. Then in September, brewers from Nagano Brewery in Norway visited Talkeetna and helped brew a sea truffle ghost. Sea truffles are a rare delicacy harvested on the southern coast of Norway. Other ingredients included Himalayan sea salt and coriander. On October 16th, the Brewers Association, the not-for-profit organization that represents America's small and independent brewers, has announced the craft brewing community's intent to take craft back from big beer. The hashtag Take Craft Back campaign, launched at TakeCraftBack.com, seeks to crowdsource the funds to buy Anheuser-Busch InBev, the international conglomerate that has been busy acquiring small breweries across the country. Over the past several years, Big Beer has been attempting to buy their way into the craft beer movement by acquiring small breweries at a rapid rate and using their acquisitions to invent craft beer bona fides. The Take Craft Back campaign features a not-yet superstar by the name of Andy, an avowed lover of craft beer, who has stated that his affinity for craft beer makes him highly qualified to serve as campaign spokesman. Quote, since 2001, Anheuser-Busch InBev has quietly acquired 10 small and independent breweries, but they won't tell you that on their packaging, says Andy. Just try to name all 10 without Googling. Exactly. Big Beer creates an illusion of choice, but we are presenting them with a reality check, and hopefully at the end of the day with a real check too. Independent craft brewers refuse to be muscled out by Big Beer, and we are uniting on an unprecedented scale to take on Big Beer and their efforts to make it harder for beer drinkers to find their favorite independent craft beers at their favorite bars, liquor stores, and restaurants, end quote. Anheuser-Busch InBev, which is worth an eye-popping $213 billion, represents the biggest and the most powerful of Big Beer, so Take Craft Beer Back aims to make them an offer they can't refuse. For full details on the campaign and how to contribute, visit TakeCraftBeerBack.com. Pledges will only be collected after all $213 billion has been secured. Until then, free swag will be distributed to all contributors, and perhaps a few toasts will be raised along the way. We'll have more about the Brewers Association in this month's feature story. That's it for beer news this month on Drinking on the Last Frontier. Next up, we'll be interviewing Nels Barnett of the recently opened Cooper Landing Brewing Company. This is KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna.
You know, when you get up in the morning and you're struggling to find the coffee pot, sometimes it helps to have a friendly voice, keeping you calm and informed. Well, that's what we do here. I'm Jay Barrett. You might remember me from 20 years ago when I worked here before. Well, I'm back, and I'm happy to be your guide from 6 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL, 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, and we're here talking to Nels Barnett, the man behind Cooper Landing Brewing Company. Hey, Nels, how you doing today?
Pretty good.
Thanks for taking the time for talking with us. So why don't you tell us about how you got into commercial brewing?
Well, all started last spring. We sold a piece of property down in Juneau, and my dad said, hey, why don't we buy some brewing stuff? And it pretty much went from there. Started collecting things and spending way more money than what we initially had, but pretty well set up now.
So you guys just got your final licensing in...
The end of August.
End of August.
Yeah. Okay. So just about a month and a half ago.
Great. Where are you available if people are looking for it?
Well, we have been on tap at Kingfisher here locally in Cooper Landing. And there's, most of the time there's crowlers at Wildman's. They sell out and, you know, sometimes the cooler's empty, but try to keep them stocked up. And hopefully this winter at Sunrise Inn.
Okay, so pretty much just locally here in Cooper Landing. Tell us a little bit about your brewing philosophy. What kind of beer are you looking to brew here?
Well, right now I'm just focusing on the standard American ales for now. Want to fine-tune all those and then start branching out from there, getting into the more specialized stuff like sours and that sort of thing.
So what beers are you offering right now?
We do several IPAs, always have a brown, always have a blonde, always have a pale. I got stout and porter in the fermenters right now, so I have some darker beers this winter.
What's your size of your brew house? How much do you make in a batch?
A whole whopping one barrel at a time. Two kegs.
A whole 31 gallons, right?
If we're lucky.
Yeah. Everything works as planned. Now, obviously, you're not doing this full time. So what do you do when you're not down here in Cooper Landing Brewing?
I own a commercial flooring shop with my dad. And we have a shop in Anchorage and Juneau. And so that keeps me pretty busy. Hoping to spend more time down here and less on that as the years come.
So what are your plans for the future here in Cooper Landing Brewing?
Right now we are trying to purchase the property that we're occupying. And if that goes well, then I'm going to move the family down here and we're going to live here full time.
And expand the brewery here?
Absolutely. Yeah, we were under contract to buy some property down by the boat launch, but being a brewery and wetlands and septic, and it just didn't work out. Soils weren't good enough to support, you know, thousands of gallons a day of wastewater. So we'll probably stay here in some shape or form.
So you might expand on this property, build another building.
Yeah, for sure. The ground's really good here, and we can put another septic in here. It gets complicated with all that stuff. But I'm hoping to expand to a 7 or a 10 barrel here in the next 2 years. That's the goal.
How long have you been homebrewing and everything before you came in and started to try and make money at this game?
It's been about 6 years. Started with a group of guys. I still brew with them. Called the Basement Brew Brothers. We brew on a Brew Magic 10-gallon system. It's really nice. And try to do that every couple months. But we make some good beer.
Where are they based out of?
Anchorage. It's some guys that work with my wife for the state.
So you're doing crowlers that are on sale over at Wildman's Liquor Store. So why don't you describe to our listeners what that entails to produce crowlers?
It's not the fastest process. The cans come on a big pallet. We got to put the labels on. They're just basic stickers. Write the style of beer. We purge them with CO2 and fill them from the tap and seam the lids on. I usually deliver about 50 of them down there at a time. It takes about 2 hours to do that. So, not getting rich off that.
So basically you're producing a nice big 32-ounce can that people can purchase at Wildman's.
Yeah. Yep. That's great for going on the river. There's no glass, you know, nothing to break. Not exposed to sunlight. I've cracked one 3 months after I canned it, and it was great.
Brandon Clay works at Wildman's in Cooper Landing. He says it's tough to keep Cooper Landing Brewing on the shelf.
Usually, like, by the end of the week, if not, it's already gone. I know, and he has kind of an odd schedule sometimes. Sometimes he's coming on Wednesday and sometimes on a Friday. I'm just not sure, you know, there's small things he has to work out. So it's kind of, it's hard to say, but, you know, we always keep an eyes open. You know, because it's still, you know, in the works, you know, and I'm sure they're still perfecting all their little things. And it's a hard process to get going. Get it whenever he can, you know, and people always ask about it. You know, even there's still tourists, not as many, but they always ask about it. You know, I had some friends come in and they were super excited about it. It does real well. I mean, you know, whatever your taste is, you know, you can find something that really goes with what you like. I've had the IPA, the pale, and the blonde, those three. I want to do the rhubarb pale. That's because I like strawberry rhubarb pie and things like that, so. But it always is gone, or you know, it's not coming out at that time, you know. So we carry a lot of different local beers, you know, craft brews and things here at Wildman's. So I'm sure, just as it's in its beginning stages, it can go a long ways. You know, a lot of these places, you know, there's a lot of breweries that already own a lot of big name, you know, and people know. But you know, once he gets things going and gets a good regular schedule for it all, I'm sure it'll pick up, because it's definitely good stuff. Sometimes we'll have these stickers, and the people love the logo. Even, like, you know, over the summer we have a lot of people from all over the U.S. work here, and then there's a couple people I work with when I do the summer job at the ferry, and, man, the He wasn't even coming out with the beer yet, but this sticker that he's got is pretty sweet. You know, there's people from all different types of, you know, backgrounds and cultures that find it a really attractive logo, so especially for the area. We got a rainbow trout with his Cooper Landing CLBC Brewing Company, holding a beer there, and up under it has the full name, and it just looks really good. Just the style of the print and everything goes really well with what we got going on here and the rainbow fishing and things people like. So by next summer, I'm sure things will be a lot better. You know, once things pick up a lot more, I'm sure he'll have a good plan set for how to keep it going, you know, when it gets busier around here, for at least by that time, you know. It's good stuff.
Thanks, Brandon. Now back to Bill and Nels at Cooper Landing Brewing.
So what about in the future? You planning to hit any of the local beer festivals?
We haven't hit any yet, but looking forward to maybe hitting that one up, Soldotna, in February, and obviously in the summer doing a few.
Well, yeah, there's the annual Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival that's in the second weekend in August that the Soldotna Rotary puts on. Consider coming over
Yeah, we'll definitely try to hit as many as we can. You know, it's still a part-time gig, so might probably not hit all of them, but we'll get out there.
So why don't you give us a little walk and tour of your luxurious brewing facility that you have here in Cooper Landing.
All right, well, basically we took a two-car garage. It's about 1,000 square feet. You know, we polished the concrete, put some tile wainscot up. We got a one-barrel brew house and, you know, basic stainless steel stuff here. Six fermenters, two bright tanks. Everything's temperature controlled. Cooler room with taps, you know. We're trying to open up a little tap room, probably limited hours, a couple days a week in the winter. Jen's going to be the lovely barmaid, and we'll let everybody know when we get to that point. Don't have a date quite yet, but yeah.
Rough time frame?
Middle of November, early December, probably. Waiting on a bunch of apparel and knickknacks and swag to come in, get that on the shelves.
So you say limited hours, roughly. What are you thinking?
Oh, we're thinking like 3 to 7 in the afternoon or something. We're initially thinking probably just Thursday and Friday in the wintertime. Of course, summer's different down here, but winter's a little slow in Cooper, so not a lot of traffic.
Well, great. Nels, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us, and we wish you every success in your endeavors here in Cooper Landing, and hope that we'll see you over in the Kenai Soldotna area for some of our beer festivals so people can try your stuff without having to be lucky enough to hit Wild Man's when there's some cans for sale.
Yeah, we look forward to it. Thanks, Bill.
All righty. Well, this is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. And stay tuned for our next segment.
Everybody's got a story. We want to share those stories and keep you in the loop. Tune in to the KDLL Evening News weekdays at 5:20 to hear stories about your community, your neighbors, and to get the latest news to help you make informed decisions. The KDLL Evening News with me, Shaylin Cochran, weekdays at 5:20 right here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
Mondays can sometimes be a drag, but don't let that get you down. Come to the Jazz Lounge for an evening remedy to your Monday. I'm your host, Chris Romberg, and I've got some jazz tunes and stories to smooth out your day and get your week back on track. The Jazz Lounge, 7 to 9 on Mondays here on KDLL.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. Hope you enjoyed our interviews from Cooper Landing. Now we're going to move into this month's feature story, which is on the subject of sexist beer labels. If you've spent any time looking at craft beer labels, you probably noticed that some breweries out there are mighty fond of a good double entendre, either in their names or in the names of their beers. Just Google search for sexist beer labels and you can gaze upon some pretty embarrassing stuff. In recent years, what to do about these sorts of labels, if anything, has been a matter of debate amongst members of the industry and the folks who keep a close eye on it, like myself. Now, the Brewers Association, the trade organization for independent craft brewers, has decided to enter the fray. At the 2017 Craft Brewers Conference in April, the Brewers Association announced that it was amending its marketing code. It now contains a proviso that members' beer advertising should not, quote, contain sexually explicit, lewd, or demeaning brand names, language, text, graphics, photos, videos, or other images that reasonable adult consumers would find inappropriate for consumer products offered to the public, end quote. The Brewers Association has also created enforcement mechanisms. Beginning with this year's Great American Beer Festival and next year's World Beer Cup, offending brands that win medals will not have their names announced from the stage, nor will their names appear in the list of winners. Only the brewery name and style will be used. In addition, violators will not be allowed to promote their beers using names and logos that the Brewers Association has trademarked. This includes the upside-down bottle icon that the Brewers Association recently introduced to mark breweries that meet its definition of craft. The Brewers Association has created a three-person review committee consisting of an attorney, an associate dean of a business school, and a public relations consultant. In the 24 hours between the end of judging and the award ceremony, this panel will have to review the 300 or so winners to determine if any of the brand names run afoul of the new marketing guidelines. Bob Peace, the Brewers Association CEO, doesn't expect them to find many violators. Quote, "In areas that are gray, we won't try to be the morality police," end quote. Members of the Brewers Association may also report possible violations by other members at any time by filling out an online form. The Brewers Association's reaction will be to contact the alleged offender for a response. If they are not satisfied with the response, the new marketing code allows the organization to, quote, "convene a review panel of appropriate and unbiased participants for review and comment based on the advertising and marketing code guidelines," end quote. While the Brewers Association has stated that it has received mostly positive feedback on these changes, some feedback has been decidedly negative and very public. Jim Caruso, CEO of Flying Dog Brewery of Frederick, Maryland, announced that he has terminated Flying Dog's 26-year membership in the Brewers Association. Flying Dog has engaged in several highly publicized battles with state alcohol beverage control boards over attempts to ban its labels. In 2015, the brewery won a lawsuit against the Michigan Liquor Control Commission, which had tried to stop sales of Flying Dog's India Pale Ale, which is named after a raging female dog. Flying Dog received $40,000 in damages, which it used to set up the First Amendment Society, a nonprofit advocate for free speech. "The BA has every right to do what it did. This is not a First Amendment issue," says Caruso. "I can respect someone saying, as an association, we encourage people to be sensitive as to how their labels will affect people," end quote. Nevertheless, he maintains that it was objectionable and unethical for the Brewers Association to impose sanctions on advertising that it deems offensive. Quote, "This group thinks that it has the right to impose its ways of thinking on other people. Bob Peace has assured me in writing that he has no problem with any of Flying Dog's brands, but that's missing the point completely. They're saying we can't trust consumers to make their own decisions, so they need to purge the industry of something consumers might buy." This entire situation has an Alaska nexus, as one of the beers frequently cited by those alleging sexism in beer labels is Midnight Sun Brewing's Panty Peeler Belgian Style Triple. To talk over the issues and other news from Midnight Sun Brewing Company, let's talk to Darcy Kniefel, their beer ambassador. This entire situation also has an Alaska nexus, as one of the beers frequently cited by those alleging sexism in beer labels is Midnight Sun Brewing's Panty Peeler Belgian Style Triple. To talk over the issues and other news from Midnight Sun Brewing Company, let's talk to Darcy Kniefel, their beer ambassador. Hi, Darcy. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing today, Bill?
Wonderful. Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Always a pleasure.
So let's talk about this beer that you guys have been brewing for 20 years and people are getting upset about.
I think for us, we don't intentionally jump out to find a sexist label. I think our biggest battle with this is actually a beer that was created by Barb Miller, who's one of our owners. This is her baby. She's the one that put the name on it. She's the one that put the label on it. And so I think it's a matter of perception that we have a problem with. And it seems like a lot of these folks that are trying to jump on us, once they know the story behind it, really begin to understand what it means. And so I think kind of getting the story out there is helping us out.
For those of our listeners who aren't familiar with it, the label shows a stylized lady, which is supposed to be Barb, riding a caribou across the sky as she's tossing off her clothes. So it's not exactly in the same class as some of the other sexist labels out there.
We like to say she's our Alaskan Lady Godiva.
You guys have any comment with the Brewers Association's latest advertising code that they brought out?
I think here at the brewery, we were pretty surprised to have them come out and take a stand against members of the association, mostly just because it's kind of their job to work with the brewers and to promote the independent and the craft breweries. As far as the labeling goes, they approved us completely for the independent craft label, so they didn't hold us back on that at all. And we're still welcome to jump into World Beer Cup and, you know, all the competitions. So it's not affecting us directly, but I think we're just surprised at how they're approaching this.
Yeah, I think quite a few people were surprised that this was the tack that they decided to take. So what else is coming down the road here anytime soon from Midnight Sun?
Well, we have just announced our new head brewer as Lee Ellis moves into kind of a bigger role of being our chief of operations and taking care of the mundane day-to-day things like making sure we have hops and growlers and that kind of thing. Sean Jackson, who's been with us for almost 6 years now, has just been announced as our new head brewer, and we're expecting some really cool things from him. His first beer that will come out of the tanks as he is the official head brewer is going to be a lemongrass and Szechuan peppercorn saison. And I got a taste of it off the tank the other day, and it's going to be incredible. On top of that, he's focusing on some really cool barrel-aged stuff that we're working on. And, of course, we're working on that sour series, the AK Wild Adventure series. We'll have some more releases of that coming out pretty soon, too. So we're staying pretty busy these days.
Sounds great. Do you know what the next wild release is going to be? What style?
Yeah, it's American Wild Ale. It's based off of a lambic recipe. We're not calling it a lambic because it's not brewed specifically in the right area, but it's going to be along that style range. And it's going to have some strong hay notes in it, a little bit of that sweetness to it. I haven't actually had a chance to taste it yet because it's sitting in barrels, but we're expecting that one to come out probably around the 1st of January. So by Beer Week, we should have that out and about for everyone to taste.
Great. Well, I haven't had a chance to try the Sporter yet, which I'm really looking forward to, but I thought the first beer in the series, the Rider, was absolutely outstanding.
I have been loving the Rider. I'm kind of bummed that we're getting into kind of these colder days because that Rider was so great and refreshing. So I've actually got some tucked away for next summer just in case. But the Sporter, that sour porter, I'm really enjoying like the darker sours that we're getting into. Kind of gives you that nice warm malty on the front and then a nice tart bang on the end. And I think they're just doing a killer job with those.
Speaking of dark beers, you guys just had the Big Berserker release, right?
Yeah, we just did. In fact, just last night, we released the Berserker for this year, and it tastes fantastic. They had some great whiskey barrels for it this year, so everything came out perfect. We also had on a keg of the 2014 and the 2016, so people could do a little vertical tasting next to it. It was a lot of fun.
Sounds great. So anything else happening?
Not too much. We got Arctic Devil coming out just in time for Thanksgiving this year. And then we're looking forward to AK Beer Week in January with tons of events. And I'll leave him down on the Kenai for a few.
Excellent. Well, hey, Darcy, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Sure thing. Thanks, Bill. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
That was Darcy Kiefel, the beer ambassador for Midnight Sun Brewing Company. Next up, we'll be talking a new segment, The Science of Brewing. This is Bill Howell drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna.
Shaylin Cochran here, reporter and host at KDLL. You know, one of the things I like most about public radio is the time we get just to learn, explore, and talk. Join us Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. to be a part of the Kenai Conversation, 60 minutes dedicated to learning, exploring, and talking right here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna, public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula.
There's a new show Wednesday nights on KDLL, and the only requirement to be featured on this show is the musician must be dead. Join me, Sal Cassano, your host, each Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. to listen to and learn about dead musicians.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. This is your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. We'll be talking a new segment here on Drinking on the Last Frontier. Welcome to what I like to call the science of brewing. In these segments, we'll be taking a look at the various scientific principles that underlay modern brewing practices. This month, I want to talk to you a bit about the ingredient that makes up over 90% of beer, water. The chemistry of water used in the brewing of beer has had a long and significant impact on the quality of beer, even though the exact mechanisms and science behind it weren't really understood until the end of the 19th century. Prior to that time period, brewers learned by trial and error which were the best brews that could be produced using their local water supply. Towns that became famous brewing centers usually did so due to the special qualities of their local water. We are all familiar with hard and soft water, especially here on the peninsula. When rain falls, it's usually soft, meaning it has nothing dissolved in it. When it hits the ground, it comes into contact with rocks and minerals, some of which, usually calcium and magnesium, dissolve into it. The ions from these minerals determine whether the water stays soft or becomes hard. Hardness can also be temporary or permanent. Temporary hard water contains hydrogen carbonate ions. If the water is boiled, these break down into carbonate ions and react with the dissolved calcium and magnesium to form solid precipitates like lime scale. Permanently hard water contains dissolved sulfate rather than carbonate ions, and these don't behave the same, so the water stays hard even when it is boiled. The difference in temporary and permanent hardness has big implications for different beer styles. Ever wonder why London became famous for its brown ales and porters? The water in London has a lot of calcium ions and plenty of temporary hardness, which is the perfect water profile to brew ales made from dark, highly roasted malts. Compare that water profile to the water used to brew beer such as Pilsner or Quell in the Czech Republic. To brew a proper Pilsner with its clean malt flavors and crisp hop notes, the ideal kind of brewing water is very soft, with almost no minerals dissolved in it. The water supply of the brewery in Pilsen just happens to be amazingly soft, perfect for producing its namesake beers. What if you want to brew a hoppy pale ale? If you're making a strong pale ale, ideally you want a high concentration of calcium ions. This reduces haze and helps the beer clarify better and minimizes the extract of all colored material, all of which emphasizes and accentuates a bright, pale, hoppy beer. A good level of bicarbonate is also desirable as this helps control pH and gets more out of the hops. You want low levels of sodium, potassium, and chloride. Sodium and potassium both contribute saltiness, whereas sodium and chloride both give a fuller, more mellow palate, which is fine for a porter or a stout, but not for a dry, zippy pale ale. Instead, you want a high level of sulfate, which gives a drier flavor and works well with the hops to enhance their bitterness. The water profile I've just outlined describes perfectly the water from deep wells in the town whose name has become synonymous with India Pale Ales, Burton-upon-Trent. The influence of water chemistry on beer was finally grasped in the latter half of the 19th century as part of the scientific revolution that turned brewing from an art into a science and made the establishment of huge industrial breweries possible. Today, thanks to this understanding, brewers can easily adjust the chemistry of their brewing water to exactly match the water from these historic brewing towns. If he's brewing an IPA today, he will simply add the correct amount of powder, known as Burton salts, and his water will have the sulfate level to match that city's famous water.
If tomorrow he wants to brew a Pilsner, then he'll assure his water is as clean and soft as Pilsen's. Coming to understand water chemistry was one of the key strides in advancing the science of brewing. Next up on Drinking on the Last Frontier, we'll be talking beer travels. This is your host, Bill Howell, on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Join us for the Veritas Variety Review as we aim to entertain while seeking what is true. With a plethora of mixed media, music, meandering discourse, and maybe a little mayhem. Tune into KDLL 91.9 at 7 p.m. on Saturday evenings, featuring a new thematic perspective with auditory stimulus to augment your analysis of the universe.
Welcome back to Drinking on Your Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. This is another short segment we're trying out on this month's show. It's called Beer Travels, and in it, I will be talking to you about some of the wonderful beer destinations that I've had the privilege of visiting over the years. Depending on show length, you may or may not hear this one every month, but I plan to slip it in when I can or until I run out of places to write about. I may focus on a city, a country, a brewery, or even a specific pub or bar. For this month, I thought I would start with my favorite place to drink beer on the entire planet. Gare, in the city of Bruges, located in West Flanders region of Belgium. Bruges is the largest city in West Flanders, and it's famous for its medieval buildings and canals, which have earned it the nickname the Venice of the North. Bruges was a thriving trading port from the 13th to the 16th centuries, but the silting of the channel connecting it to the sea in the 1500s turned it into a backwater. This was fortunate for us today, as it allowed the historic city center to retain its late medieval architecture, and it's a prominent World Heritage Site of UNESCO. In the northern half of Belgium, where Bruges is located and the people speak Dutch, a gare is a small blind alley, usually built as a fire exit. Gare is a memorably simple cafe in such an alleyway off Breidelstraat, the cobbled way that runs between the Market Square and the Burg Square in Bruges. Most visitors remember this place for its wonderful understatement. The small downstairs room is the epitome of Brugian elegance. A tiny staircase leads to an equally small balcony room upstairs. To be served, you must have a seat, which can be tough to find on busy weekends. Gare is a long-standing favorite of beer lovers around the globe. It has a huge beer list of over 120 bottles. This alone makes it memorable, but there is something about the atmosphere that makes this cafe the one that people remember with nostalgia. Whenever I talk with someone who has visited Bruges, inevitably one of us will ask the other, "Do you remember the one down the alley?" Once you find a seat and finally select your beer from the amazingly extensive list, it's lovingly served in proper glassware on a small tray with a doily, along with a tiny dish of cheese. Take your time, savor the exquisite taste of the beer, nibble on the cheese, and just revel in the sheer civilized pleasure of it all. Enjoy all this to a background of gentle classical music. Gare is famous for playing Ravel's Bolero as the last tune of the evening, signifying all patrons that it's closing time. So if your travels ever bring you to Bruges in Belgium, be sure to seek out the one down the alley. I guarantee you won't be disappointed. If you'd like to learn more about beer travels in Belgium, I recommend you get a copy of The Good Beer Guide to Belgium by Tim Webb. It's easily the single best guidebook for the beer-loving tourist in that beer wonderland. Next up on Drinking on the Last Frontier, we'll be doing our monthly foray into beer styles. This month, we're talking stout. This is Bill Howell on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. I'm your host, Bill Howell. This month, we'll be talking about another traditional beer style, stouts. Stouts are warm fermented ales that are known for their dark color, generally an opaque, deep brown or black, as well as a roasted character that's often compared to dark chocolate or coffee. Both of these traits derive from the use of roasted grains in the brewing of these beers. Traditional English stout recipes rely primarily on the bitterness from these roasted grains to balance the sweetness of the other malt and provide a dry finish, so they tend to show very little hop character. American craft brewed versions tend to have a bolder hop presence. Stouts as we know them today evolved from stout porters, which were very popular in London in the 1800s. The term stout first emerged in the 1700s in England to describe the high alcohol, bolder flavored version of any beer style, but over time it came to be closely associated with this porter style. In the late 1800s, as porters fell out of favor, the designation stout porter was simplified to just stout. There are many different styles of stout offered by brewers today. The most widely known is the Irish dry stout, popularized by Guinness. Despite its dark color, Irish dry stout is generally a very light style with rarely more than the 4% alcohol by volume of a Guinness. Another popular style is oatmeal stout, in which oatmeal is added to the mash bill, resulting in a richer, silkier mouthfeel and a full head. The sweet or milk stout, brewed with the addition of lactose, was very popular in the early 20th century when it was thought to be beneficial to nursing mothers. After nearly dying out, it's enjoying a revival among craft brewers today. American stouts, higher in alcohol and brewed using large additions of assertive American hops, are also a staple of American craft brewers. Finally, there is Russian Imperial Stout, a style first brewed in England for the Tsars of the Russian Empire. This style has become hugely popular among craft brewers and drinkers, particularly here in the U.S. These beers are usually above 8% alcohol, and the best examples are full-bodied, rich, and complex. They will often have the flavors and aromas of dried fruit, coffee, and dark chocolate. Imperial stouts are also a favorite style for barrel aging, usually in used bourbon or other spirits barrels. The big stout flavors can stand up to the elements added by the barrel without being overwhelmed. When it comes to pairing stouts with food, the classic match is a dry Irish stout with oysters on the half shell. The briny flavor of the oysters is perfectly complemented by the roasted notes from the stout. Dry stouts also work quite well with traditional fish and chips. The heavier American stouts pair well with grilled meats like steaks or pork roasts. Imperial stouts, with their rich flavors and higher alcohol, make excellent matches with chocolate desserts, like mousse or chocolate candies. If you're interested in trying local examples of stouts, there is a plethora to choose from. St. Elias Brewing keeps its Mother's Milk Irish Stout on tap continuously and regularly has barrel-aged Russian Imperial Stouts on offer. Kenai River Brewing has its Swiftwater Stout as well as its breakfast beer, which is a mashup of oatmeal and milk stouts. It too has Russian Imperial Stouts on offer on occasion. Cassock's Brewery has its Roughneck Stout, its Smoked Russian Imperial Stout, and its Statney Imperial Stout. In fact, most breweries in Alaska offer a stout or two, if not continuously, then on a special release basis. So that's the story behind stouts, one of today's most popular craft brewing styles. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier with your host, Bill Howell, on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. It's time for Beer Gear. This month on Beer Gear, I want to talk about a couple of classic books on homebrewing that have recently been updated with new additions, as well as an excellent fantasy novel in which beer plays a major role. When I first began brewing almost 30 years ago, I started out with the second edition of the classic book, The Complete Joy of Homebrewing by Charlie Papazian, who was also the founder of the American Homebrewers Association, the founder of the Great American Beer Festival, and most people consider the father of modern American homebrewing. The fourth edition of this book has now been released. The book is the Homebrewer's Bible, everything you need to know to brew beer at home from start to finish, including new recipes, updated charts on hop varieties, secrets to fermentation, beer kit tips, and more from the master of homebrewing himself, Charlie Papazian. The Complete Joy of Homebrewing is an essential guide to understanding and making a full range of beer styles, including ales, lagers, stouts, pilsners, doubles, triples, and home run specialty beers and meads. Everything to get started is here. The basics of building a home brewery, world-class proven recipes, easy-to-follow brewing instructions, and the latest insights in the arts and science of brewing. Papazian also explains the history and lore of beer, reveals the technology behind brewing, and shares countless tips on how to create your own original ales and lagers. If you're a beginning home brewer, you can hardly go wrong by starting out with this book. After all, it worked for me. You can find The Complete Joy of Home Brewing on Amazon for $17.37 in paperback or for $10.99 for the Kindle version. Despite his history, Charlie Papazian is hardly the only homebrew guru out there. Another excellent guide to the subject is How to Brew by John Palmer. Originally published in 2006, How to Brew has also been released in a revised and updated edition. It has many more photographic illustrations than Papazian's book and is written in a more modern style. Whether you want simple, surefire instructions for making your first beer or you're a seasoned home brewer working with all grain batches, this book has something for you. Palmer adeptly covers the full range of brewing possibilities, accurately, clearly, and simply. From ingredients and methods to recipes and equipment, this book is loaded with valuable information for any stage brewer. Once again, as a beginning home brewer, you really can't go wrong with this book. It's also available on Amazon, with the paperback priced at $16.96 and the Kindle version at $9.60. Finally, let's talk about a fantasy novel. The Drawing of the Dark by Tim Powers is a historical fantasy novel originally published in 1979 and reprinted several times since. The year is 1529, and Brian Duffy, a world-weary Irish mercenary soldier, is hired in Venice by a mysterious Aurelianus to go to Vienna and work as a bouncer at the Zimmermann Inn, former monastery and current brewery of the famous Hurstweston beer. Meanwhile, the Ottoman Turkish army under Sultan Suleiman I has marched into Europe and is preparing to undertake the siege of Vienna. With the Turkish army travels the Grand Vizier Ibrahim, a magician who intends to use horrific spells as part of the siege, and an old foe of Aurelianus. Duffy spent time in Vienna years ago, and as he returns, he's haunted by memories of past events and also finds himself having visions of mythical creatures and being ambushed by shadowy people and demonic monsters. In the city, Duffy reconnects with Epiphany Vogel, a former girlfriend, and her father, Gustav, who is working on a painting called The Death of St. Michael the Archangel. It seems the painting is never quite complete, and the elder Vogel is continuously adding additional details to the work, causing it to gradually become more and more obscure. Duffy finds himself not only drafted into the city's defensive army, but also led by Aurelianus down mystical paths from the surprisingly old brewery to even more ancient caves beneath the city, in search of defenses against the approaching army and clues to Duffy's very nature. As it turns out, Aurelianus knows more about Duffy and his past than Duffy himself knows, and his real purpose in hiring him is to protect the hidden Fisher King, secret spiritual leader of Christendom, and to defend him and the West against the Turkish advance. The real reason that Vienna must not be captured by the Turks is that it is the site of the Hurstweston Brewery. Its light and Bock beers are famous throughout Europe, but its dark beer, produced only once every 700 years, has supernatural properties and must not be allowed to fall into enemy hands. Meanwhile, others are drawn to Vienna in anticipation of the Drawing of the Dark. These so-called dark birds, magically sensitive individuals from far-flung corners of the world, arrive in the city hoping for a sip of the Hurstweston Dark. Finally, a small group of middle-aged Vikings have improbably sailed their ship down the Danube River to Vienna, having sensed that the prophesied final battle of Ragnarok will take place there. All of these elements come together in a climactic struggle before the walls of Vienna to determine whether the brewery, the city, and Christendom itself will survive or fall. I first read this book almost 40 years ago and thoroughly enjoyed it. I recently reread it and enjoyed it all over again, especially with my current passion for beer. If you enjoy a good fantasy novel, especially one with a beery theme to it, you'll enjoy The Drawing of the Dark by Tim Powers. That's it for this month's Beer Gear, and that's it for this month's show. Here's our closing thought. This month's closing beer quote is from Fritz Maytag of Anchor Brewing fame. "We brewers don't make beer. We just get all of the ingredients together, and the beer makes itself."
So that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Hope you enjoyed this month's show, and we'll see you around. Cheers.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers.